So you haven't heard this yet, then?
Oh, no, I have. Oh, okay. I'm laughing because I remember actually, like, headbanging to this in the car. Like, I was on, the first time I heard it, I was actually on my motorcycle.
Oh, wow.
I was, like, banging away in the Bluetooth headset. And I was like, this is amazing!
And suddenly you're going 40 miles faster than you were previously. Yeah, I know that one. This is Ask an Atheist with me, what it says on the tin, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Sam.
Hello, Ron John.
Hello.
Yeah, so another psychic is dead.
Couldn't see that coming.
Yeah. And that brings the inevitable question. Did she? 90s television psychic and cult icon, Miss Cleo, died of cancer at the age of 53. Yori Del Harris was the face of the popular Psychic Readers Network in the mid to late 90s. Harris claimed that she comes from a family that practiced voodoo, but was forced by PRN to pretend to be psychic because voodoo was too scary. The PRN was eventually forced to return hundreds of millions of dollars by the Federal Trade Commission for illegal billing practices. Harris, however, insisted she was just the face of the company and wasn't personally punished.
Okay, so
how do you return hundreds of millions of dollars?
Well, you get hundreds of millions of dollars and you put it in a big place and then suddenly it ain't there anymore. That's usually how this works out.
I know no one who has actually gotten hundreds of millions of dollars who has kept $100 million.
Yeah, that money's long gone. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll write you an IOU.
And right, yeah. I'm not saying this is one of those Brewster's Million situations where they're like just busted through it all in 30 days, but that's pretty fascinating.
Well, maybe they knew what they were doing was kind of hinky and that the train would finally come to a stop, so they just put it in a bank and lived off the interest, because no, interest on $100 million is no...
It's solid.
Yeah, pretty solid.
That's a reasonable thing, and assuming... I'm assuming that the PRN, the Psychic Readers Network, doesn't have huge overheads.
Probably not.
This sounds like voodoo economics to me, sir.
Yeah, I believe. Hey! Yeah, I mean, call center. Nah. Okay, you know, a call center was kind of a, you know, that was a significant outlay in the 90s, because you actually had to have phones and stuff.
But... Right, and it was all actually like wireline and steam powered, or however we ran call centers back in the day.
Right, and that's that, so, but I mean, it's not $100 million, right?
Right.
Speaking of steam powered... An Iowa county has issued an appeal after the statute banning vehicles with steel tires on public roads was ruled unconstitutional for violating the religious liberty of Mennonites. The ordinance was originally written in 2009 when members of the Groffdale Conference Mennonite Church started driving tractors with steel wheels on public roads, causing significant damage. The Mennonites claim that their religion prohibits them from driving vehicles with rubber tires. The county revisited the ordinance in 2012 to address the constitutional issue, but the revised version was also ruled unconstitutional by a lower court. Iowa does not have a state-level Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
So we're clear.
Yeah.
They're saying that steel wheels are religiously allowed.
It's not really that good of an album.
It's not.
No.
I mean, it was their comeback album.
Well, right. What a comeback, right?
And if you look at Mick Jagger's wheelchair, he's got rubber tires.
Hey, I got a solution for this.
Okay.
Darkwing Duck had an episode about this.
What?
Darkwing Duck went back in time to a society where dinosaurs were driving on rubber roads with stone tires. There we go. Problem solved.
So you make the roads out of rubber.
Right.
Yeah.
And say, try it now!
Exactly. There you go. And the Mennonites can drive all they like.
Well, you know, I could see kind of the case, you know, they got these horse-drawn carriages that need to have steel wheels in order to last a long time, so, you know, they have to do steel wheels on public roads, they have no other way. Except, I've looked at the picture of these things, they're tractors. Like, they got engines and stuff.
They're actually tractors.
They're like real tractors.
See, the other piece of this is kind of a self-resolving problem, though, because I don't know if anybody here has been in Iowa in the winter.
Yes.
Steel ain't cutting it.
No.
These things are going to turn into sleds. They're not.
I mean, Illinois, I mean, they get some serious snow, but we're not allowed chains.
Yeah.
In Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Or weren't. That may have changed. I don't know.
No, it's still not allowed.
Okay. Yeah. Is it the same in Iowa, do you know?
That I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually didn't really pay attention to chain laws until I moved here to Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, why does it have to be steel? If you're hewing to some very strange standard of technology after a certain age,
It'd be like unleavened iron or something.
Right, yeah.
You're asking for them to actually be consistent.
I'm asking for a consistent standard. Like, perhaps, maybe, you know, what was more authentic or what make you better to a community standard in construction is not steel wheels, from which steel must be fabricated in a mill and you buy it, but actually just wooden wheels. Just drop the steel whatsoever and just, like, just go with wooden wheels. Like they did back in Mennonite, when Mennonites were, like, totally high-tech.
She's dating a Mennonite. Ooh, how modern.
Yeah.
With a tractor and everything. Yeah, I don't know why for that point.
Why did you go Southern on that?
I don't know why for that gag I had to be Lindsey Graham, but I did. I did.
But I imagine if they say that, they're going to say, well, wooden wheels don't last as long, so they have to be steel. Gotcha!
Yeah, that's what we call efficacy.
Yeah.
We got a solution for that. It's radial rubber. Pneumatic tires.
Yeah. Hey. Radial pneumatic tires. So we're suddenly going to break into one of those 1950s,
right,
the magic of technology things.
It's a great, big, beautiful... No, sorry.
Yeah, we might get a copyright.
And they're, yeah, then they just bust in.
Lawyers, no.
With their ears.
Sorry.
Do the Disney lawyers actually have to wear the ears? That would be amazing.
That's a very good question.
Or should they have to make all of their court imports in-person arguments in the Mickey voice?
Be it resolved! Objection! Yeah, I could get that one. That's pretty good.
He's badgering the witness.
Here's a badger. Oh, God. Okay. All right. So, in less cool laws, similarly, we've talked about GMOs in a bit, and I think it might be time to actually do a full episode. But I think it's important to talk to about it right now because a federal GMO labeling law was signed by President Obama. The new law requires companies to have on their packaging either a statement, a QR code, or a phone number which tells customers whether or not the product contains genetically modified ingredients. Despite the fact that over 900 studies and 2 decades worth of research has not found any example of GMOs being hazardous to people, anti-GMO advocates claim that there's not enough known about the technology and people have a right to know what's in their food. So...
people have a right to know what's in their food.
Yeah.
So that's a right that they should have a history of exercising.
I agree.
And in order to have that right, they have to have scientific understanding, a certain capability to process what is and isn't scientific information.
Yeah.
And a notion of what constitutes scientific evidence. And scientific evidence is not a
gut feeling.
It's certainly not a statement, a QR code, or a phone number. Sorry, I was getting to the punchline. This is fear-mongering.
It's absolutely fear-mongering. We don't know what they are, so we should label them. So we label them. Ooh, they're scary. Otherwise, why would they label them? Well, I mean, that's the thing.
I believe there is a prominent nominee for a prominent... party in this country, who is fond of saying that certain things should be done until we figure out what the hell is going on. Because there's something going on with those Mexicans.
You talk about Shaft?
Or the Muslims. Shut your mouth.
Yeah, we have often spoke of Trump, so you may name that he.
I may name Volda Trump. Trump
Volda Trump. Trump-demort. Indeed. But so here's the thing. They may not have a history of actually advocating for the right to know what's in your food. But this is the standard. This is basically an oblique farm subsidies bill, and specifically for organic farmers. And the GMO labeling law, this is not the victory of the common people over big business. This is the victory of big business over big business. A lot of people yell about Monsanto and DuPont and whatever, but big agriculture in this country as of a couple of years ago was a $60 billion deal. That's the number we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Organic food is a $63 billion industry. Right. So this is just two big organizations, two big, huge screw-off infrastructures.
Two enormous infrastructure, two enormous institutions with deep pockets on each side.
So you have a lot of fear-mongering people who like to be scared for the purposes of political exercise. That's a lot of there's a lot of that going on with this GMO labeling stuff. So I take them aside and I go, you know what? This whole you get a right to know what's in your food, you're absolutely right. So I propose a compromise. We label everything. When it's GMO, we say so. When it's organic, you tell me where it was grown, how it was grown, what sort of fertilizer was used, what organic means in this case.
Right.
When it's not organic, you tell me where the farm is. And you basically, you actually give me a provenance, an actual provenance for every food item presented to me.
So we already have ingredients.
Right.
So why not simply state, why not, well, if we already have ingredients, then presumably the GMO elements.
But here's the other side of that, Ron John, is that every time I have suggested that to people who advocate for GMO labeling, they say no, because it'll cost too much money.
Because it's an enormous burden on the organic farmer. And suddenly organic farmer is like whittling a stick and running a farm out of his pockets.
Yeah.
And it's a family farm, which is the same thing that everyone always says whenever you put any pressure on a farm. Because the moment you talk about actually putting pressure or having demands on farmers, suddenly every farm is a family-owned farm. But whenever you talk about...
Never mind that family-owned farms in America is exceedingly rare.
Right, it's like a single-digit percentage of overall farming, and the vast majority of farms are either giant corporate farms or giant corporate tax write-offs for individuals with enormous wealth.
Right.
And neither of those things are the kinds of things that seem like they appeal to the common man.
No.
Right. So
cue the song.
Right.
This is fear mongering. This is. This.
I want to farm like common people.
Yeah,
I want to farm like common people do.
Wow, it's all musical references today, isn't it? So basically, this is just fear mongering. All it is, it's the standard. It's the idea that organic is just a bunch of people. It's not huge corporations and. It's anti-science. Last week, I said I had this big, huge deal about how there is no political party in the United States. There is no political caucus. There's no real group you can join that has any push inside the Beltway that is entirely pro-science.
No, I mean, because you make money off of just... the money is all in the counter, counter narrative.
Yeah.
Essentially, I mean... It takes a lot of money to learn about something, but you make a lot of money by countering that example.
I'm all for information. We live in an age defined by information. I would like to see more information about food, but not under the cover of fear mongering.
Well, and I think for me, it, you and I talked about it just moments ago about how I don't necessarily have like a dog in this race. I do have as far as like GMO, like I. Personally feel that I don't know that we know enough about GMO to just be able to say simply yes it's all bad or yes it's all good or even yes we don't know.
Would you believe,
however, I feel that labeling it all on the off chance that something might be happening assumes that there is something happening, and it's going to drive behavior. It's going to drive consumer behavior,
which is entirely,
and that is a certainty,
and that's the point.
Right,
that's the goal. They don't want GMO crops to have any place in the marketplace, even though these sorts of GMO crops are going to be very important as climate change becomes the more prominent problem facing human beings.
Yeah, climate change and our ever-increasing population of people that we have to feed. I mean, we still have...
Not to mention the extant problem of trying to get people proper nutrition, which we're still not doing.
Right. I mean, in America alone, we're first world nation.
That's a good counter to simply say, all right, fine, you can go ahead and label GMO if you want. Once you've guaranteed that everyone in the United States, we'll leave off everybody in the world because Obama's not in charge of all of them, despite, you know, rumors
kind of
to the contrary.
Yeah.
But once you can guarantee everyone in the United States is genuinely in a position to make choices about their food, you can go ahead and label it so they can make intelligent choices.
Right.
But until they're not, until you've guaranteed that everyone is actually in a position where they're choosing between this food and that food, as opposed to choosing between food and not food, you don't get to mandate that there's going to be some qualitative reference information on labeling, whether it's reference information or just bollocks.
Y'all want to talk to John Malthus? Because this is how you get John Malthus. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. When we come back from the break, we'll answer an email, maybe do another news story or two. See you then.
Dine and bowl with the Ask an Atheist team after today's show at Tower Lanes at 6323.
All right, so I'm wondering, that was about 15 minutes, so we need to do another 15 minutes.
I didn't know you were going to do Malthus. I was actually going to bop into Borlaug.
So oh!
It's interesting.
You can go into Borlaug coming out of it.
Because that's the thing. Like, there's a reason why I do, there's a reason why I don't. The reason why I don't is because I don't know enough about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether or not, for example, the genetic modifications that Norman Borlaug made to the wheat stalk in order to make it stand up as opposed to come down, whether those would be considered GMO.
It would be.
Now it would be. It wasn't at the time, but...
Right.
Yeah.
How far back do we go?
Genetically modified. I mean, everything is. I mean,
or is this the definition of immigrant? Right.
So, right.
We're not going to talk about the Irish.
I think what they're really talking about is genetic modification by taking a gene by modifying genes in a lab rather than in a garden. Even though the effect is basically
the same. So it's not cross pollination.
Yeah.
And sort of like Mendelevian.
But the end.
Mutation.
But the end result is the same. Really.
And it's super tested before
it's easier
ever,
to make this is where I find myself a little skeptical of the quality of the mutations that are being made in GMO, and that's one of the reasons why I'm on the fence about it, is that I think GMO is introducing bugs, hoping that some of those bugs work and some of those and just hoping that we know that the modifications we're making to code are going to work.
Do you want to walk into my domain? Because I will own this.
This is genuinely my question. There's a reason I want to walk there.
So the answer is to do nothing. I mean, that's the problem here, is that these genetically modified crops. Okay, you know, some of them are just Monsanto wanting to make a buck.
Unicron.
Okay. But then there's a whole nother category of them which are solving real problems, like rice with vitamin A.
Mm-hmm.
Or things like that. And genetic modification is the only way we're going to get these crops, and we are going to increasingly need them as it becomes a positive responsibility for humanity to manage the ecology of the earth.
Right.
We are going to need these tools.
So we need to improve the product. There's a number of ways to improve the product. One of them is traditional sort of cross pollination
with lead times of 50 years.
Right. But no, hang on. I'm not saying that's alone. We're allowed to use all methods available in order to solve the kinds of problems that we're talking about. We're talking about global famine. We're talking about we're talking about famine. We're talking about hunger. We're talking about, you know, poverty and the ecology of sins that surround it.
Right.
So I'm all for solving all those problems with all of the capabilities of humanity and all of the capabilities of science.
Okay.
The question then becomes, the challenge then falls on quality assurance. This is a QA problem.
Okay, but there's been a lot of QA work. What's your status quo
bias?
Are
we good enough at
it? Because it seems very high. The evidence suggests that it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then that's fine.
I think it's even in our brief.
That there's been no, there's been no finding.
20 years of studies. I mean, if somebody wants to make a plant that kills everybody on Earth, one, that's actually fairly hard. Two,
right.
It's like you can use a knife to prepare food. You can also use a knife to stab somebody in the eye. Does that mean we ban the tool? And among, especially, it's a
and
human
you know
tendency.
Me, I'm not a fan of banning tools.
Right. And that's basically what's going on here, is that
I'm
you have this
pro tool. I have
and,
other t-shirts.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we're not recording right now. This is actually
we actually
really
are bad. Recording.
Okay.
This might make it into the...
Okay.
Yeah. And it's judge the usage of the tool, not the tool itself. Mm-hmm. And QA, and I've actually made, just as you just did, the QA argument. Mm-hmm. This needs to be solved with QA, not banning.
Right.
And the way you do that is you do the modification and you test substantially.
And you test and you test. Yeah. You make sure the tests are independent. You make sure the test quality, the quality and the results of the tests are transparent.
Yeah, and you've got guys...
You encourage repeatability. You encourage replication.
Right, and you've got guys in caves deep underground where there are no plants with greenhouses testing shit out so that if it ends up, oh, wow, it makes every wheat plant on Earth die. Yeah, I'm going to set this on fire.
Right. Exactly. We're just gonna put another rock on top of this rock, and no one will ever find this rock, and we'll be fine.
Right. Basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's I'm willing to say that GMO can be harmful, but I mean, it's like vitamin A. You need it, but if you have too much of it, and your skin melts.
And there's also a certain there is a certain tolerance for mistakes. I think that's the other piece of this that we don't necessarily always accept.
Yeah.
Is that in the doing of anything, there are going to be a certain number of mistakes that are going to be made, and we need to create a food system, nearly any system, but in this case, we're talking about a food system. We need to create a food system that's resilient to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So as long as we're giving people choices, that's fine, but we're not going to be giving people choices if we're going to start labeling this stuff.
Right.
Because if we start labeling this stuff, it's literally going to be, well, one of them is going to disappear because it's not financially lucrative anymore, and one of them is going to stick around, and now we've reduced the diversity of the problem space, and that means
ta-da!
One problem nukes everything.
Yeah.
Now we've got beef.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic. This is actually a segment. Okay, bye.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children. That's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. Going at us with a bullet all the way to the top.
Partly cloudy skies.
Indeed. So we have an email. And this is an interesting one. This is Matt from the interwebs, he says. Regarding the most recent episode where you talked about the Pledge of Allegiance, I see two options. Use the original pledge from before it was changed, which just omits under God. You really don't need God in there, and I doubt too many people would even register one nation indivisible with liberty and justice for all. Or drop the original motto project and join the new motto project. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under Zod, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. In Zod we trust. Zod the Father, 1978, Zod the Son, 2013, and Zod the Null Spirit, DC Dogma. Zod is three of three, and Zod is one. Zod bless you, Sam Mulvey.
Okay, the Zod the Father, Zod the Son, and Zod the Null Spirit, and
yes.
Then Zod is three of three, and Zod is one. Does this guy make soap? Because he's got his label. I think I've read this in a shower.
Are you suggesting that this is...
This is the new Dr. Bronner.
Yeah, this is Dr. Matt.
This is absolutely Dr. Matt.
Yeah. Oh, wow. All is one. Everyone come together in peace for thing. I've always wanted to do an episode where I just read a Dr. Bronner's soap label with no context.
That'd be a great dramatic reading.
Yeah.
There are a handful of things that I really want to do dramatic readings of, like the torture memos that came out. Yeah. So, but another one would be like the Dr. Sorry, that's a horrible segue. But the Dr. Bronner's label would definitely be one of those things at doing a dramatic reading.
Yeah.
Preferably a highly alcoholologically
I would think. Yeah. This would happen at like a comedy club, I think. Reading. Yeah.
Yes.
But man, I mean, not that I like to give money to Woo, but that's some good soap.
It is some very good soap.
Yeah, it's enough mint to be painful on your skin, which is how I like it.
So why do we why choose Zod? I mean, like, he's the general, but he's the general of a planet that doesn't exist anymore, under an army that doesn't exist anymore. I don't recognize the authority of Zod in this matter.
Well, I mean, okay, you have a series of entities that wish that you kneel before them. This is the Goa'uld problem, is what I call it.
Okay.
You have a series of entities that wish for you to kneel before them as your lord and master.
Okay.
And apparently you seem to need to pick one.
And
otherwise,
so
yeah. And so he's suggesting, instead of this Jesus-y fellow or this, you know, his cousin Allah, we just go with something that we like, an understandable quantity, as you so
okay.
well point out.
All right.
We know who Zod is. We know how much scenery he can chew, especially Zod the Sun.
Right.
And so why not go with a completely transparent, especially if they're in the Forbidden Zone.
In the Phantom Zone, right.
Understandable Nelt entity.
Right,
One that is formless and without void or whatever.
Huh. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, I think it's amusing. I mean,
I hope.
Yeah, just, sorry.
What?
Why not Zoidberg?
Why not Zoidberg?
Why not Zoidberg?
Why not Zoidberg?
Why not Zodberg? Yes. To which Zod says, Zod? Berg to channel the old the original movie.
Oh,
if you recall,
yes,
with Gene Hackman. Otis
Berg. Nice. Okay, so we should
that's terrible.
Yes, it is. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has stopped a public school from showing religious films to their students. Central Heights High School in Nacogdoches, Texas received a complaint from the FFRF for a health teacher showing the students film God's Not Dead. Also, a science teacher showed his students Expelled, Intelligence Not Allowed, a questionable documentary about intelligent design by actor Ben Stein.
Aha!
Yes. While school officials originally insisted that their teachers had the right to show the films, the district legal department eventually told the FFRF that they would train their teachers on First Amendment and separation of church and state issues.
Yeah, this is straight up dumb. Like,
yeah.
There's no earthly way that anyone could possibly think that they were going to get away with this.
Yeah, there may be nuance. There's no nuance here.
And the fact that there's no nuance here is irritating, considering the fact that they're from Nacogdoches and they've got that G in there that they want us to pay attention to, which requires close reading.
It does.
And, so if you're going to expect close reading from us, the people of Nacogdoches, then, you're going to have to do some close reading yourself.
I wish Rosalind here, because that's got an unvoiced G. I think you just make your mouth do it, but you don't.
Nacogdoches?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how God's Not Dead is good for your health.
It looked like Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, it's a health
but
teacher.
But he gets hit by a car. Yes.
He's a health teacher.
Or a heath teacher, but
all right. Why a health teacher?
I try not to point out those sorts of things in the notes.
So why a health teacher?
Right.
That actually is really fascinating to me as well. Like, why would a health teacher choose to show that? Like, what's their connection? What's their hook into the Texas standard?
Because it's a teacher with an axe that needs some grinding.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's a teacher. Isn't it a movie about a teacher? Sorry, I've sort of
philosophy teacher is one of the storylines.
Yeah. Right. But he's a teacher who's
a professor.
He's a professor, right? Yeah, who's making this argument?
I remember how everybody was surprised when it turned out Kevin Sorbo's kind of in that kind of Christianity. But I remember a little TV show from the turn of the century called Andromeda, where it was mostly written by one of the guys from DS9. And then they kicked him out and went completely dumb and episodic. And Kevin Sorbo said, he wrote stories nobody could understand.
And he was proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying Christianity is dumb. I'm saying this Christianity is dumb.
Yeah.
Complex things are complex.
And I ahaed about it. This story has Ben Stein in it.
Yeah,
but it's Ben Stein in the intelligence in Expelled.
Yeah,
where he's really just lending his voice to it. It right. may very well be that that's what he believes.
Well, he bankrolled
there's no
it.
Ben Steinish, and it's not Ben Steinish in any way. Like it's not economic. It's not numbers based. It doesn't make any arguments.
Well, there are levels
it's all
of
Sturm und Drang.
There are levels of Ben Stein we're willing to accept here. I mean, there's the there's the Ben Stein of Ben Stein's money. There's the Ferris Bueller's Day Off Ben Stein, which is the most well known Ben Stein.
Right.
Then there's the Economist Ben Stein, which
right.
is only slightly less well known. But he's from the he's like an Austrian school economist, isn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah,
something like that. And then he has been on the record as being religious. And so while this is his, he bankrolled this, I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure, because I mean, economist. And this the news brief says it's a questionable documentary. No, it's a documentary, but everything in it is pretty questionable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there's I don't actually know, and this is actually a good question. Are there? I'm saying this is a good question because I'd like an answer. Are there good documentaries about intelligent design? And they could be. I mean, they could be debunking. That's fine.
Well, Nova did one about the Kitzmiller trial, which is pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one, well, and of course, there's. It's not really a documentary, but you know, Inherit the Wind.
Yes. are you familiar with any documentaries? This is actually, I mean, the thing I'm most familiar with is Kent Hovind's 8-hour series on why everybody's dumb.
Yeah, that's the one where he essentially came.
There's
out
an intelligent
with,
design ring cycle.
That's the one where he came up with the hypothesis that dinosaurs were dragons.
Yeah,
I love that one. That's
one of my favorites. I don't. It might be that
I find
one.
Myself possessed of just enough time to actually explore that. Do you want right. to talk next week?
Yeah,
let's
I think
this.
So. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
I'll have toothpicks holding my eyes open. Awesome. in a Clockwork Orange chair, in a Vaughan Poetry Appreciation chair.
All right, one more and we're out of here. This one, I like this one because it's... continuing the theme of the exceedingly dumb. A federal court dismissed a lawsuit by the Satanic Temple challenging Missouri's abortion laws. The Satanic Temple filed a lawsuit against the state over a year ago, claiming that the mandatory 72-hour waiting period and reading materials given to women seeking abortion violated one of their members' religious beliefs. Judge Henry Autry dismissed the case, saying that since the plaintiff was no longer pregnant, she didn't have standing. The Satanic Temple's founder and president, Lucian Greaves, called the decision ludicrous and announced his intention to appeal.
Well, it is interesting because it basically the precedent set by this dismissal is that all you have to do in order to inconvenience people through by making religious rules into legal rules is to make the waiting period as short as possible.
Right.
Right. So like 72 hours, 70 hours, like they're just going to get, you know, as long as it's too short of a time to find legal representation and find a judge that's going to sign everything or like, you know, muster the financial wherewithal to do any of those things.
Of course.
It should be fine. So 72 hours is like this sort of crappy period that they've come up with because,
well, yeah,
I don't even know.
It's limiting abortion by steps rather than just saying, no, Roe versus Wade is wrong. Na-na-na-na, boo-boo, we're going to ignore the Supreme Court.
Now, is Judge Autry here saying that the plaintiff is no longer pregnant and there she does not standing, or she wasn't pregnant at the time of the filing of the original?
No, she was pregnant at the time of the filing, but now she's not pregnant and it's a year later. Either way, she's no longer pregnant and she's got no standing. Now, all right, thought experiment. Starting with Josh, apply this logic to other crimes. Go.
This is a perfectly good example of a time that we need cryogenics.
How's that?
So that way, you got to, in order to have standing, you still have to be pregnant. So, and this was over a year.
Ah.
So she has to be pregnant. So, I mean, just put her on ice for a little while and then when actual comes to the trial time, then we just defrost her.
She's spending a year frozen for tax reasons to borrow
so
the
getting all J. Fry on this. Yeah, got it.
Well, actually, that's oi, can't remember. Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, that's Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's the guy who owns the... is that the guy who owns that...
The black ship that shows up black,
yeah,
with the black buttons and the black...
No, button. No, that ended up being the transforming guys. Anyway, so apply this logic... Josh, apply this logic to another type of crime.
I am no longer robbing your bank, so therefore all is good. Drop the case.
Okay.
Your Honor.
Right. Yeah. I'm speeding. Yes, I was speeding, but not right now.
You're dead, so... Obviously, malpractice isn't an issue.
Right. And or you've already been fired for being a woman, so you no longer work here. So I guess we're good.
Yeah. This is amazing. I love this. This is so going to fail hard.
Like, if a judge and a jury can't be spontaneously manifested in the exact moment of a transgression, then nothing can possibly be done about anything ever.
Judge Dredd.
Judge
Dredd.
Exactly. This is the pathway. This is the pathway to the executioners. This could is the this pathway
be,
to the judges.
Could this be a... All right, I'm asking you because you're... I'll ask both of you. Is this a violation of her right to a speedy trial?
Well, because it's been a year...
Yeah.
I think so.
But yeah, you no longer have standing because we didn't move fast enough.
Right. If she doesn't have standing because of the delay, then absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's basically the ruling is saying that she doesn't have standing because of the time frame.
And it's not uncommon for these sorts of trials to take several years.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like most cases around abortion, including all of the challenges that have occurred, well, not the challenges around abortion clinics, but most of the challenges around a woman's right to choose as opposed to the infrastructure. I mean, the ones that go to the Supreme Court obviously don't happen in the 72-hour waiting period.
Yeah. Well, anything else on this one?
This is just hysterical. I look forward to the appeal.
I'd like to follow this one,
I not only look forward to the appeal for just, you know, jurisprudence reasons and the fact that the right thing needs to be done here, but I genuinely look forward to the satanic church's calm, collected, non-scenery-eating public relations management effort.
That is pretty amazing,
because
it's
going to be movie worthy.
That's such a punchline. I love it so much. And every time we talk about the Satanic Temple, I think of a Butthole Surfer song. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to some people you may not have heard on this show in a while. The people in front of me accepted, of course.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn. And we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Would you guys like to hear the greatest version of the Ask an Atheist theme there has ever been?
I think I've heard it before.
Yes.
But it is pretty amazing.
Ha 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 ha!
That's magic.
It is.
It's Yngwie Malmsteen magic.
Well, let's just say Phil Whitfield found out I was a King Crimson fan, and things went kind of south from there. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Toll free nationwide. And continuing the heavy metal parking lot theme we've got going on here, we have kind of the band back together here. We have the apex of the podcast empire that we are building here. We've got Mike Gillis. How are you?
Doing good.
And Casey Doran. How are you?
Rest in peace, Jerry Doyle.
Indeed. Oh, yeah.
That's what took us to get back together. Garibaldi biting the dust.
Garibaldi had to bite it. And not even by shadows. Actually, do we even know what took our beloved security chief?
I don't know. Probably not something. I think it was cancer, but so not something sad.
Something sad.
Something sad.
I was going to say, whenever nobody says anything, I always assume the worst, and I'm like, how did David Carradine die again? I always tend to go to that direction. I'm like, there's something embarrassing.
I thought it was the one-finger death punch. Maybe that's what happened to Jerry Doyle.
He's still sitting in that chair, and he can't go to the studio. He's like, can you carry me?
One-finger death punch, I believe, is a euphemism for autoerotic asphyxiation. Asphyxiation!
I was worried I couldn't say that.
Well, we're not on the radio anymore, but explain this one to your kids. Yeah, anyway.
It feels better when you can't breathe.
It has something to do with being in your car. Auto something, I don't know.
Autobotic asphyxiation.
One shall rise, one shall fall.
I know for a fact Transformers can be underwater, so they don't have to breathe.
Oh, yeah.
Choking, they can't choke them
out. Like, they're constantly asphyxiating.
Yes. They're in a state of permanent ecstasy, libidinal ecstasy.
Well, you can hear it in Megatron's voice.
That explains
it. Every syllable. Oh, Optimus Prime. You're going to die, Prime.
I think that explains Energon. seem to have a lot of quantity of it. I'll just put it that way. Anyway, for those of you who are new to the show, which I think maybe all five people, Mike and Casey here used to be kind of my bosses for the show a little bit. I mean, we were all equals, but I was mostly focused on the sound stuff, and I let you guys do drive the show content.
I mean, we were Trotskyites, really.
We were, yeah. We had no leaders.
This was
it was a complete madhouse.
Yes, it was.
Actually, the TV sets in the early days were kind of a complete Charlie Fox situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you asked me on because I was trying to go to sleep last night and I was realizing that before I even knew it was happening, Google was cataloging my history of watched YouTube videos, and I was able to scroll back far enough in the hundreds, nay, thousands of different videos back to a time when fully 50%+ of the videos that I viewed were atheist related. You could tell, like, there was a certain point in time where it was like, oh, atheism, atheism, atheism. And I rewatched Sam Harris's first stint on the Real Time with Bill Maher, and I realized how it was like, this is a touchstone. This was the beginning of something, possibly the end of something, in sort of in the way that Kurt Cobain said that when Smells Like Teen Spirit came along, it was the end of grunge, not the beginning.
Yeah.
It was perhaps the end of atheism when he went on.
This is not the
end. Maher.
This is not the beginning. This is the end of the beginning.
Also, Batman and Robin soundtrack. That's a statement.
I was thinking about the really cheesy sci-fi movie from like the early 90s, Millennium, which was based off of a John Varley film or novel. Anybody know who John Varley is? Nope. Fantastic.
Oh, I know the name.
John Varley wrote Star Trek books.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he also. I didn't know that because I don't. Yeah. That's not my thing. But he wrote Millennium. He wrote a bunch of stuff about in the Ophiuchi, I don't know. I've never known how to pronounce that hotline. I actually like the colonies one where like all the planets of the solar system except Earth are inhabited, and it's pretty cool.
Sweet.
Because alien invaders came in and killed everybody.
As you do.
Speaking of alien invaders, why don't we talk about Pokemon?
Okay.
Heyo! Yes! Do you see what I did there?
Are Pokemon aliens?
No, they're not. They're from here. They just like sprout out of the ground or something.
Like a cabbage patch?
No, I think you're thinking Pikmin.
Pikmin, yeah, that's true. Pikmin actually do grow in the ground.
Pikmin.
pocket monster. We always forget the etymology is that it was a pocket monster, has a more sexualized and sinister tone when you consider what another pocket monster
is.
Yeah, pocket monster is a felony.
Yeah, I think there's a Gnarls Barkley song about that. Some Saudi authorities were outraged when it was discovered that there were Pokemon monsters found in the Grand Mosque in Mecca. A website team found that the Grand Mosque was one of the fighting arenas in the game, and even found Pokemon battling atop the Kaaba at the center. One of the Council of Senior Scholars called the game a national security hazard because it was uncovering secret locations. One gaming expert explained that the developers used a previous game called Ingress to mark locations where people gather, such as churches, hospitals, and malls.
So the same people who hate everything that's popular hate something that's popular?
Well, yeah.
I don't know. It's not an Islam thing. It's not a Christianity thing. It's just this general idea.
Killjoys?
Killjoys. Yes. It's the idea of these moral watchdogs that always hate something that is generally, at the time, more popular than the thing they're selling. And it's all part of what I like to refer to as the war on fun.
The war on fun. let's take a step back, though. How awesome is it that you've got, like, that Muslims are praying to a nonstop poker fight?
Oh, on top of the
seven
Kaaba?
Times, yeah.
I think, why wouldn't you fight on the Kaaba?
Why not? That's like the ultimate Highlander
thing. It's spiritual warfare that's happening right underneath our noses.
Yeah. Actually.
Pika? I don't know. I think it's kind of neat. I think the thing that they hate is, you know, that only devout Muslims are allowed near the Kaaba.
Right. And
you know what that means? That means that people are bringing their phone into the area with the Kaaba.
Yeah.
And playing Pokemon. And that's freaking them the frack out. I had a swerve there at the last minute.
They are done. Well done.
They're freaking out. And they can't handle the fact that somebody is in something other than this sort of religious sense of just like, oh.
Well, yeah, it's not like the people who wrote Pokemon Go, which was not Nintendo, by the way, decided that they were going to have a little fun and turn, like, religious holy sites into Pokemon arenas.
Yeah.
This is entirely based off of statistical data of people playing Ingress.
Algorithms, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, if we can we at a certain point have to recognize the fact that there's no exegesis on what happens when an algorithm tries to populate a virtual space layered onto real space with virtual creatures. It's just what a computer program does with a random seed.
But not only that, it's not just a random seed. There was actual data used to come up with all of these things. But it has been randomized for the purposes of game.
And the data of which you would assume is relatively benign, right?
Came from a previous phone game that was very much like Pokemon Go, which was very popular around here, called Ingress. It was made, but the people who made Ingress also made Pokemon Go, and they used the statistical data that they collected from Ingress to figure out where to put Pokestops and Pokearenas, and they did it entirely. This is like it precisely the thing some stupid godless programmer like me would do,
right?
Which is, you would just take a statistical analysis of density of players and put meaningful things where there's a high density of players.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it happens that a lot of people are bringing their phones and playing Ingress in the Grand Mosque.
Yeah.
Which to me is,
there's a lot of people there all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there's going to be people there, and there are Pokemon in the Vatican fighting right now.
Right.
I mean, this is just the way it works. There's a lot of people that go there. There's a lot of people using their phones there, and it's an algorithm that figures that out. It's not like somebody is trying to be blasphemous in some laboratory somewhere going, it's just the way it works. It. You know what I like about Pokemon Go? I mean, I'm a generation separated from Pokemon.
Sure.
I'm probably about 5 to 10 years too old to have any kind of emotional connection to these characters. But it's a game that's making people use parks again.
Yeah.
It's a game that's making people go outside and get excited to walk around in the sunshine and interact with other people playing Pokemon. And that's something we haven't had with video games in a long time. I mean, you used to have any kind of multiplayer experience. You had to invite people into your house. And now you can just go onto the internet through a headset and yell at some racist kid at 2 a.m. in, like, the UK.
Right.
But now you actually have to confront them face to face. So if they're going to be racist, they have to say it to your face.
I mean, also,
there are
Pokestops near my house, within walking distance of my house. And the generally behavior I see is people congregating in the same place and never saying a word to each other. So it's kind of like going to church, too.
Yeah.
not respect.
I kind of like that you can tell immediately if somebody's playing Pokemon Go, because it looks like an episode of classic Star Trek where everyone's kind of crowded around the tricorder and they're all walking around it. And it's like, oh, okay, that person is Spock and there's Kirk and McCoy. And they're just kind of nee, 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 nee. And they're following the signal. And it's like, you know, I have no problem with this.
Can we get somebody like in a Gorn outfit to come out and go,
volunteer.
Did you know that the showrunner, Brian Fuller, the guy who's making the new Star Trek Discovery, the new show, he has admitted, and we do not know if this was facetious, that all Gorn are gay. All
really?
Gorn are gay.
Really?
Does that mean that they only have one gender? Because then that's the assumption.
I think it was a joke response, but I think you can expect it to be canon now.
Is it? I don't know. Could it be a bit like, you remember the movie Enemy Mine?
Yeah.
That movie was great.
There were auto-flowering aliens on the network.
That you just kind of were born pregnant, and there doesn't seem to be gender at all. And Lou Gossett Jr. gave birth on that planet, and he was raised by Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Which is the best adopted dad.
Yeah, jeez.
Especially Space Dennis Quaid.
Space Dennis Quaid was Christian. Oh, no, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
Do you remember what they were doing? They do like a mini funeral and then they eject all the bodies of the dead like people out of the space station.
Right.
And they had crosses and like whatever forever. And I think they were like, wasn't he godless basically? And they didn't know what to do with him. They were
right.
Like, oh, just give him a whatever.
Yeah, give him a thing.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Mickey Mouse.
So, I mean, wouldn't it be, like, the neat thing about Pokemon Go here, though, is the inversion that might happen, where perhaps if we hunt Pokemon and we genetically engineer Pokemon and have them hunt real life and then have religious disputes in a Pokemon Go altered reality state.
All I can think
where
about
if you want to participate in a crusade or a jihad, you just fire up the app on your phone.
Oh man!
I mean, we could totally robot jocks this.
Yeah.
You don't even have to destroy stuff. You just have a couple Charizard fighting it out. that's way better. I'd rather solve our problems.
I don't know why they're saying no to this. There's like some serious get out from conflict if you engineer this right.
Yeah, you need it. It's for all their anger at the Grand Mosque being used this way, if nobody in that building wanted to fight with their Pokemon, they would have no problem.
Right. But they have that built into their whole deal where you know, you're all people, so therefore you all suck, and we get to hit you with sticks.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that is there. I mean, that's the thing. When you get conservative religion, you get killjoys. I mean, that's what they do, is that they're angry at pop culture until they lose to pop culture, and then they embrace pop culture and write a Gospel of X type book.
Isn't it the sort of thing, maybe we've had this discussion on way long ago, is Christian rock, for example. It's this idea when you have a completely secular art form of something, and then you try to like layer on some sort of like milquetoast religious message.
Yeah.
And it's so derivative that it's just obvious. It can never be as interesting, as spontaneous, or as entertaining as the original of it is.
It's a toothless version.
Once it's appropriated, it's like, oh God, give me a break.
But I think the thing that stops the Muslim world from having that is that you don't have a secular government, and you actually have a method of just cracking down on something entirely.
Right.
The reason that you have people in the United States who are Christians that hate the Simpsons and then love the Simpsons, hate Harry Potter and then love Harry Potter, is that they can't ban Harry Potter.
Well, this is precisely why I've started. For those of you who've been listening to the show, and you who not every week, and you guys who probably don't, I've been doing a Pokemon story every week since Pokemon Go was released. I'm not playing it myself. I'm not that into that sort of game. However, I love Pokemon Go. I think it's a great thing for two reasons. One, as you say, it gets people out of parks. It gets people interacting with each other. I mean, how many murders have been solved now because of Pokemon Go?
Oh, yeah. It's like the opening scene of CSI. If that show was still on the air, we'd have a Pokemon Go cold open.
Right. No, we absolutely would. And the other side of it, which is why I love it for this show, which is kind of what I want to talk to you guys about, it is that it's now an official return of all that horrible
Shazbot
stuff that Christians, it's you guys, so it's you guys, so I feel like I'm on Radio Versus the Martians.
We're potty mouths.
We are. It's all that stuff that you and I used to really would rail about early days of the show, like the attacks on D&D, the fact that they would throw Harry Potter books into a fire and then When the plastic hissed, they would call it demon screaming. And the fact, you know, and all that, everything that is nice that has a vaguely spiritual quality to it, or even a quality that can be, you know, ball peened into looking something like a spiritual quality, is Satan. And therefore, you should stop playing this game and vigorously rub yourself while talking about Jesus.
Mm. Yes. Hmm. Yeah, again, as long as you have a government that doesn't take the sides of those people, that the pop culture will ultimately win.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, it's fun.
Once upon a time in Europe, Christianity was the pop culture.
It was.
Yeah.
And they had the power to crack down on things they didn't like and people who said things they didn't like or published things they didn't like.
Yeah.
And they could control the printing presses. And in the Muslim world, you have that, where those sort of religious authorities have that kind of power.
Yeah.
And I think that there's only so much you can crack down. That's why tons of people in Iran know how to get around the government censures on the internet. They know how to get, you know, I've heard that the rooftops of Iran are covered with satellite dishes with blankets over them during the daytime.
Yeah.
Because people know how to get news from out of there. You have, and you can only stop the signal so much, but you can
slow it down. The fun thing about satellite television in Iran is that there are satellites, there are transponders they're allowed to use, and transponders they're not allowed to use, which is kind of weird. And it's all, and you can kind of tell because where they're pointed.
Yeah.
And that's what the blankets are for. It's like you're allowed to have a satellite, but you're not allowed to have that satellite.
It's weird. But yeah, there's only so much you can block, but you can block it quite a bit, and you can make it illegal, where here, it's the same thing that you have with any moral panic, which is that moral panics last exactly one generation, because you get people who are terrified of D&D, they're terrified of Harry Potter, they're terrified of this, they're terrified of that, they hate The Simpsons. And then what happens is those kids who grow up with it, who didn't turn into psychopaths the way they promised, some of them become U.S. senators.
Yeah.
This is just like pot, really.
It is just like pot. It's absolutely just like pot. How do you guys like living in the post-marijuana legalization, post-apocalyptic afterworld? I mean, how many people did you have to kill for your day's ration of water this week?
Oh, God. Everyone was... They killed me for my ration of water, and they used it to fill their bong.
Yeah. It was so bad.
What I think is best about the post, I guess you could say, anti-prohibition era of marijuana in this state, is culturally everything is exactly the same, except people talk about pot like they're grown-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't talk about it like they're a 1980s anti-drug ad.
Yeah, I was a little afraid that there would be an increase in like in the thing that I call in my head dumb pot culture.
Oh.
Yeah. Which I was kind of afraid of, not because I thought it would infect children, but just because it bothers me and I find it quite annoying.
You mean like pot leaf shaped glasses and people who act like Cheech and Chong movies?
Right, precisely. You know, it's like clearly, I'm in no position to make any statements whatsoever about imbibing substances.
I am, but I won't.
Right.
Says the man with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shirt that reads, instead of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it says, I am actually in my 30s.
I love it when people finally read that shirt, because it's usually after you've been in a crowd of people for several hours, and then they read your shirt, like, oh, yeah, that's the best thing ever!
It's a camouflage shirt.
Yeah.
It's a little bit subliminal, and that's what I kind of like about something.
But I think wearing even a passing reference to late 1980s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles invalidates you of serious criticism for everything till the end of time.
Speaking of the pot culture and stuff, I'm somebody who I have smoked pot before. I don't use drugs. I don't drink or do any of that stuff now. I'm somebody who's doomed to be a driver for the rest of my life.
That's why we're friends.
God's lonely man. I can monologue about the sadness of drinking Coke at bars.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I don't give a
Shazbot.
Shazbot.
No, I'm going to edit it. I've already just Shazbot. That's what I'm using.
Okay.
I just need to get you saying Shazbot.
Shazbot.
There you go.
Mr. Black. So, yeah, I just don't care. And I think my goal always as a teetotaler is to be the sort of teetotaler that is the opposite of vegans I don't like.
That is my goal.
It's mostly, and it really kind of boils down to this. I just don't like imbibing things. It's not ideological. It's not philosophical. It's the same way that I don't like Michael Bay movies, so I don't watch them.
Yeah.
So it's that simple. I don't feel the need to feel superior to Michael Bay movies. though I do.
I think to sort of answer your question, I think in this world, it's easier to be Mike, actually, because I can recall in Prohibition, we what now call Prohibition era, especially growing up as a teenager, and I was kind of against it going through high school, and then I broke free from that prison.
Indeed.
You have to turn into Timothy Leary. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's
cool.
No longer has the
your own death?
It doesn't have the mystique, you know. It doesn't have the thing where because it's illegal, it's bad, and therefore it's something you do to rebel as a rebellious person. So it's easier to be someone who's just like, I just don't do it. It's easy to just not care. I remember having friends who clearly just didn't want to smoke because they didn't want to say things like, "Oh, I'm allergic to pot."
Right?
Why? Because you had to make up an excuse to be against it, and I don't think that's that way anymore.
And the other thing
I am in my 30s, and so things are not, you don't have to be cool anymore.
Well, the interesting thing that I've seen is that culture hasn't gone away, but is now allowed to speak more intelligently.
Yes, thank you.
That's cool.
I like that.
This was an unexpected positive consequence of the legalization, was that all the stuff they talk about only to each other, they can now speak openly about. That's like, wow. I like this better. Can we
get the per capita conversation got a lot smarter, a lot more adult, and a lot less of a fetish?
Well, yeah. And what you read in the newspaper, what you saw in the news was a lot smarter, was a lot less appealing to authority, it was appealing to utter fallacies and simple untruths. And it's a lot more, I mean, it's unfortunate that it has to all be couched in the, like, look at all the revenue this is generating. Like, if that's the zero level importance of something is whether or not it makes money and brings taxes. But I mean, at least it's a little more adult. At least we talk about it in the same way we talk about alcohol now.
How dare you challenge the prevailing spirituality in Reagan's America, Mr. Dorn?
What year is this?
I can speak as somebody who's worked at bookstores for probably about 15, 16 years of my life. That we've always had, because it's always been legal, sections in the store on how to grow marijuana. You can't ban a book on how to do something.
Right.
So
my whole the upper level of my house is sort of a shrine to that concept.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing where I've had the conversations, and on some level I kind of miss it, is that prior to 2012, where this was legalized in Washington State, the people who'd come in and ask for pot books were very different. There is a KT boundary between the before and after.
Yeah.
And before was people who would speak in code, who would try to suss out what would be near the book they want and then ask for that. And sometimes they couldn't quite figure it out because they don't know anything about gardening aside from this one thing. And the best example
I can't just say hydroponic and then you nod and
I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And
that was such a pain in the ass when I wanted to learn how to do hydroponics. It's like, do you have any books on hydroponics? And they go, well, here's the pot section.
Yeah.
No, I actually like want to grow corn in
Shazbot.
Yeah. Shazbot.
Yeah. It's crazy because the scenario I had, and let me give you an example of the pre-KT, the K half of the KT boundary. I was working at a Federal Way bookstore, and I was up there with the head cashier, and this guy comes up, and he's exactly the guy you expect to ask for. He's like, hey, man, do you guys have any books on? I swear I'm not exaggerating this voice. I'm not playing it up for comedic value. I may be playing it down.
Okay, understood.
Do you guys have any books on horticulture? And my coworker, this smile just beams across his face, and I'm not going to make assumptions. I never do. He might actually want books on hydroponics. And I'm like, oh, is there something in particular you're looking for? And he just goes, you know, like plants and stuff? And my coworker at that point just goes, come on, man, we're cool. And those are the conversations that you have. You have it where somebody doesn't want to say. And what I get now is I get something, somebody comes in who looks like somebody's dad. It's like, I think I want to try growing pot. It seems like that's a thing now. And it just looks like somebody's dad.
Did I tell you about the porn guy on when I was running a Usenet server about 22, 23 years ago now.
Oh, in the ancient prehistory internet?
Yeah, when you, the only way you could get your porn was on a, the world's biggest bulletin board, is that I'd always have somebody who, wanted a certain alt group, like alt sex something, or alt picture sex dot, you know, something.
Alt dot shame dot.
Yeah, yeah, or alt.tennis.anna.kornikova's.ass or something like that, and Shazbot, and it was always like, and I'd always have somebody come up and say, I'm having trouble getting my news groups. I'm like, okay, which news groups do you want? And he's like, well, comp sys programming Pascal, and I'm like, no, I'm on that group. I know we have it. What groups do you really want? And he's like, ah, no. Tell you what. Go, and I eventually created a web form where it was completely anonymous. And just said, just go to this page, put down what groups you want, and I'll make sure we do a group ad. We were running DNews or something like that. I was not very good at it, but I could add porn groups. I figured out how to do that on day two because we knew what it was going to be used for. And then one day I got this guy who called up and he said, net tech support. Can I help? This is Sam. Can I help you? I can't get my porn.
That's so refreshing.
And I'm like, what porn is that? And it was like, alt sex, donkey, something or other. And I'm like, I am adding it right now, sir. Any other questions? You're going to add my porn? I'm going to add your porn, sir. Thanks. Click. And I'm like,
thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Well, I love those
there's
people.
Something that's just liberating about, and I suppose this relates to the capital A atheism thing, too. There's something that's liberating about when you break through a taboo,
yeah,
where it's just, it's the subject that, it's the Voldemort subject, the subject that may not be named, and then, like you said, people start talking about it like adults, and then you really strip away all of the fallacies, and then you get to where the grown-ups start talking about things, you know. And that should be the zero level, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have to claw our way through that up to there before we can actually start behaving like real human beings.
I don't know how we got here, but this was an amazing conversation, so I decided not to stop the train. However, Casey's here, and he is a husband and father, so I figured...
And those things.
Yeah, yes. We should... I'm actually kind of want your take on this particular story, because everybody in the atheism community is talking about the new diner on Highway 9. No, this.
Oh, let me give you some pearls to clutch here, just to get ready.
Yeah, okay. The Satanic Temple has requested to launch a number of after-school Satan clubs in a number of school districts around the country. The clubs will teach kids that people can be of different religions and still be morally upright. Almost all the districts that the requests were filed in were home to Good News clubs, evangelical after-school groups that teach kids a variety of fundamentalist form of Christianity. Satanic Temple founder Lucian Greaves said that the evangelical clubs were trying to erode the separation of church and state, and that any district that denied them would have a tough legal fight on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of love I love this on a lot of levels.
Okay, remember when we used to make fun of this sort of thing ago?
I still feel a lot of the same things about it.
Yeah.
But it's pretty classic trolling.
I love them now.
Yeah. I think harm... I mean, I have said over and over again, and I was not the originator of this idea, that inculcating a sense of an eternal hell, an eternal pit of suffering into a very young mind is an incredibly destructive, incredibly malicious, and really an unparently thing to do for your child.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm taking that as my zero level, like, screw it. Like the if legions of parents in legions of states across the country are pretty much okay with essentially teaching Christian dogma in schools, or at least looking the other way. If the Satanists want to have their fun, sure.
Well,
if you're a parent and you're not paying attention, that's your problem, you know.
Like, and the same legal precedent that gives the Satanists the power to get into schools was created by these fundamentalist groups.
Yeah.
So they're basically reaping what they sowed. That unfortunately laws apply to everyone and not just them, despite what they throw out there. And it means that if you're going to have any of this stuff at all, you need to have all of it.
Right.
And that includes Satanists, who weirdly enough are saying stuff that sounds a lot less scary than that friend of yours who worships a different god and goes to a different church and has different customs is a bad person inherently. I really think that's one of the most dangerous things you can do to a kid. when you go to public school, you encounter all different sorts of people. Mm-hmm. And some of those kids, you're going to have a Jewish friend or a Muslim friend or an atheist friend. And the thing you're going to learn right away that your parents might not want you to learn is, hey, it turns out that they can be a good person and still different from me.
Right.
That the thing that I am...
Good news that, of a different sort.
Yeah. Indeed, it isn't. This isn't the thing that makes me good. The thing that makes a person good is separate from this belief system. And I can see it in people that are different from me.
Right.
And this undermines it and also creates this weird, I guess, I don't know, it's like this contradiction that drives a lot of kids crazy who don't have the cognitive ability to think this critically about things yet because they're like 7 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're just, and you get a lot of kids, and I've heard this story from tons of people who talk about how the kids running home crying because they're afraid of their Jewish friend is going to burn in hell now.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can pull that kind of garbage off.
Pretty sure Becky's been on the other side of that.
Yeah, that yeah. You get shunned by your friend because now you're afraid that that kid that you that was your friend is now a hell magnet, and you have to be away from them. But you know, it's just garbage.
So I guess the reason I brought it up as since you this is not so academic for you as somebody with a child, would you allow? Would you be okay with your kid going to a Satan after school club?
Yeah, no, I mean, I would, I don't know any Satanists as far as I know, so I would want to actually meet, I would actually, okay, maybe I do,
yeah.
You know, maybe I'd actually want to meet them, I also,
they
know,
probably wear capes, Casey. Yeah.
do they have fangs?
No,
I've
they,
heard they
actually,
have
no, they don't, I've not seen a lot of capes, and I've not seen a lot of fangs,
I
have seen some horns.
I assume they look like Max von Sydow in Flash Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
That too, oh, yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Ball on your sword.
Yeah. Did you see, when the Satanic Temple was at our counter, what's his face, Franklin Graham thing in Olympia?
Oh, it'd be fun to troll Franklin Graham.
That's what they did. And the crowds were coming by just as they were, like, this was not planned, but the crowd was breaking up just as the Satanic Temple guys were starting to do their thing. It was glorious. Oh. I mean, I had to position myself so I could watch the faces of the crowd, you know, because I was like, oh, this could get bad real quick. So I wanted to keep an eye on it.
What I love about this is that they're trying to make a point, and the people they're trolling are so bloody predictable.
Yeah.
That they walk into it every single time and act like that worst self that they always try to claim is just a mean, vicious stereotype.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly that turns into that. And it's like, you know what? All it really needs is the right thing to set it off to let you see what sort of person somebody is when they're confronted by something that's different from them. You know what? And we've talked about just the horrible stuff that the Mormon Church has done about gay rights. But the thing I always thought they did right was that they laugh off and embrace the things that make fun of them.
That is one thing they're very good at. Yeah.
And
yeah.
There aren't a lot of groups that are good at doing that.
Most I've met the contra example, but
oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean
they clearly exist, but right. I mean they bought ads in the Book of Mormon musical.
Yeah.
And the only thing that these people would have to do is laugh off the Satanists instead of treating them like instead of being a bunch of like dinner theater atheists, I think is the phrase you use, Sam.
That's a phrase I've coined which has broken quarantine and is now in the wild.
Nice.
Instead of, you know, there's a bunch of guys that are clearly secularists who dress like a intergalactic supervillain on purpose to get a reaction. They get exactly that reaction, and it's amazing that the people walk right into it every single time. The minute you say Satan, you immediately get the person fainting, going oh, and start chanting at them like they're casting a circle of protection spell from Dungeons and Dragons.
Just once I'd like to get that on film. Yeah.
I mean, we've seen stuff like that before.
I wish we could all do the Daniel, we could have a world of the Daniel Dennett where kids get compulsory world religion classes.
Right.
That will be my approach.
I got that in the suburbs of Chicago. I got a fairly strong world history class that taught me the basics of most of the world religions. We even gotten some of the less popular ones that had a historical impact on the very Eurocentric but not Euro exclusionary view of history that they were teaching us at the high school. Is like they didn't really talk about all the fun stuff that happens in India. but they certainly referenced it because when it splashed out into the Enlightenment narrative that they were teaching at my school.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you want me to sum up sort of how I would take it is I view most religion, not all, but most religion as obscurantism, right? It's just as a way for some people to block knowledge because the knowledge impinges their power. And the antidote to obscurantism is saying, let's learn more. So Satanism, even though it's kind of created as a counter-reaction, is now used sometimes as a tongue-in-cheek joke, is still one facet of that entire thing. And it's just like learning about anything else about humanity. I think we should have more of it, not less.
I could see the Satanism thing sort of like when you see people putting bumper stickers on their car, they don't put the Autobots logo on there. They put the Decepticon logo. They put the Imperial logo from Star Wars on there.
I do the Predacon or Dinobot logo myself.
See, there you go. It's all about, I'm going to dress up like the bad guy, because bad guys are fun.
Yeah.
Bad guys are colorful, and bad guys dress in the most outlandish ways, and when you dress like a cartoon bad guy, and this person treats you like you're a serious bad guy, it's kind of
funny.
It
is amazing. So my take on this is, if you are a student at one of these high schools or junior highs or whatever, and you want to start up an after-school Satan club, this is basically a modification of the open invitation I've made for anybody trying to start up an SSA affiliate at a school, is if you need the attention of my show, you have it. If you need my help as a citizen, you've got it. All you got to do is contact me. The other side of that, though, is I would love, okay, you know how my Patreon, because it's not for the show, it's for me, it says podcasts, technology, and journalism, is I'd love to cover an after-school Satan club from the student's point of view.
Yeah.
Not from Lucian Greaves' point of view,
yeah,
but from the point of view of the students who are doing it. And I just think that would be an amazing story, and I think I'm in a unique place to get it.
So can I offer a rejoinder to this idea?
Absolutely.
So I understand the value of satire.
And I should hope.
Satire is a way for us to understand reality. How much, if this whole Satan after school thing is purely to present like basically a yes men style prank satire on the real world, how much is it parodying or making light of people who, and I assume there are sincere Satanists, I assume that Satanists aren't all just people who are in
it for
the laughs.
We need to take a step back and understand which Satanists we're talking about.
Okay, so because I don't know.
We're not talking about the Levans.
Okay.
This is a different group of people who with the Satanic Temple has a philosophical bent. It's not, they're not just the yes men. Where the yes men are just screwing with people, where there is sort of a philosophy, a merging philosophy behind the Satanic Temple, but it's a very humanistic, very secular, or very non-sectarian, very humanistic. I mean, there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn between American humanism, the Satanic Temple, and the Universal Life Church and Unitarian Universalists.
That's interesting.
There's a similar thread in, can't we all just get along?
Right.
I could see it as you teaching people how to be good guys while dressing like bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say they don't worship Satan. They value the literary Satan.
Hmm.
That's what they say.
My favorite version, the Neil Gaiman one from Sandman.
Yeah,
he is
sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
No, that's better. I mean, I think bad ideas should be mocked.
Right.
I think people's identities shouldn't be mocked.
Yeah.
Right. And there is where the line is drawn. So if it sounds like these people are not, they're not there because it's a hilarious send up of Satanism, but because it's just a different way to view a more ecumenicalist view of ideas, belief, and spirituality.
Yeah,
then I'm totally.
There is sort of an electric Kool-Aid vibe going on here. Let's not ignore it.
But even the Anton LaVey style Satanists were never the sort of Satanists that, you know, Franklin Graham rails against.
Not in the same way, but I mean, LaVeyan Satanism just looks like a dressed up Thelema. I mean, it just looks like a lot of Aleister Crowley writ large.
Aleister Crowley stuff, pagan stuff, probably some Ayn Rand stuff. A lot of weird stuff mished together.
And Thelema is fairly objectivist on its own.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all, you know, what the German guy everybody loves, Nietzsche.
There's a lot of that where it's like that sort of stuff. But the image that Franklin Graham would talk about is almost like you're a servant of Cthulhu, where you're somebody in a robe who goes into a basement and sacrifices somebody to raise a monster.
Well, that goes right back to the 1980s Satanic Panic thing, which is what leads us to Pokemon Go or Pokemadness is my segment.
Pokemadness, yeah!
I mean,
the cream of the crop.
I'm going to get that Charizard. We just all did that.
Pika!
You're very good at this voice acting deal.
Charizard!
Yeah. But the Satanic Temple people, I think, okay, in the Venn diagram, the slight overlap of people in the Satanic Temple and people who know who I am, they tend to be two ways about me because of the fact that I inadvertently started a mimetic war with them with that whole dinner theater atheism quip, which was clever at the time, but some days I kind of go back on it. I wish I kind of hadn't said that. But yeah, this I love this idea, and I'm willing to help.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
So to wrap up,
cool.
Let's do some old school stuff. How about this? All right.
Well,
this comes to us from Eric from California, and when reading this, I cannot not picture Eric Hovind. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why do you even waste your time writing things like this? Use your time to bolster your fellow atheists. Just like Christians build each other up, atheists should do the same. You're grounded in your belief, leave others alone. When people ask me what I believe, I tell them. I can't change their mind or their heart or whatever they're clinging to, so I move on. I don't slander them. Once you're entrenched in what you believe, there's no point going any further. Bye!
Well, it's concern trolling.
Yeah.
I don't know what he... Oh, I don't do this, and blah, blah, blah. Well, one, no, that's not all... Christians do. They don't just bolster each other. They usually bolster each other by saying things about us and trying to define us.
It's comparative bolstering. We're awesome because they suck.
Yeah. And everyone's victim to it. I mean, everyone falls victim to it. That we can.
Atheism fell pretty hard for a few
years. We were. Yeah. We can be jerks. We really can be jerks. Yeah. And when you get into that,
speak
chosen,
for yourself, Human.
Yeah. When you get into you fall into the chosen people narrative about yourself, it makes me roll my eyes and not want to be around you. When you're like, we're the people that are going to save the world from blah blah. And I'm like, I don't know how to hang around with you.
I think we probably all do this to a certain degree. I think there's a certain part in someone's discovering their atheism, discovering in air quotes, where you're so you're excited by that possibility of sort of bouncing it off of real theists, you know, where it's sort of like, we're gonna get in a tussle. At a certain point in time, you realize that yes, the Eric is right, where it's sort of like people get deeply entrenched in their beliefs, and they're not gonna have a spontaneous conversion on the spot because you stand up and you stand up to them and tell them they're wrong. Man, of course,
that doesn't happen outside of the Left Behind video games,
right? Unless someone like we get into the discussion and someone asks me for my opinion, then I give it to them. I'm not. There's no evangelism here. There's the evangelism is only when solicited. There's no unsolicited evangelism, because I think the solicited atheist evangelism is almost as unbearable to take as unsolicited knock on your door, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses or whatever. Like, just if it's not welcome, it's not welcome. It's not your place to rub your
Shazbot
all in someone else's face.
I think I'm making it opt in rather than opt out. Shazbot. I'm making it opt in rather than opt out.
Dick Van Dyke, guys.
Yes. He's talking about detectives, folks.
Oh.
Don't you rub that detective in his face. yeah, I think a lot of it is that you... you make it opt-in, then people have the opportunity to back out of it. If you don't like what somebody's writing, you can always not look at it. It's not like this is the screen with Big Brother on it or anything.
Right.
And I think the point that a lot of times atheists do make is the sense of it does feel like it's being put on every screen, and it does feel like people are using non-malicious but ultimately harmful exclusionary language all the time, and making them more aware of it. That's one thing. But I think a lot of the time when a new atheist or whatever, somebody who comes to discover their own atheism, a lot of that anger, I think, comes from a sense of shame at what they used to believe and things they used to say, right, and a sense of embarrassment and wanting to separate themselves from it. And almost everyone I've ever met who goes down that path briefly, including myself, you all calm down after a while.
You're taking Eric's side, aren't you?
What? No, I'm not.
No, well, here's the thing. He's like, why do you write this? Well, because... People come in search of what you are writing.
If I can
you're
make
not
this real for you, this was a website comment. Do you know which post it was attached to?
Probably something I wrote, right?
Billy Graham.
Yeah.
Your Billy Graham piece.
That's
wow.
The thing is,
wow.
I'm fine with that. And the reason is that he doesn't have to read it. And a lot of it was not me just telling Billy Graham names. It was pointing out in the ways that Billy Graham is a harmful figure. And the fact that there's kind of... I almost hate to use the word. There's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy in the way that Santa Claus is a conspiracy, where there's a lot of social pressure to not say anything bad about certain people because we like the idea of that person existing.
Right.
And that we all kind of collectively agree to not look at the bad things they do.
I've called it, when we've talked about this in the past, I've called it the Mother Teresa effect.
It is the Mother Teresa effect, that people want the idea of the Mother Teresa myth, but they want to just ignore all the things that she says about gay people, abortion, divorce, just really vicious stuff. And the fact that she uses the influence she has for really, really bad social politics or hanging out with dictators.
Right.
And with Billy Graham, he says a lot of bigoted things.
He does.
And we shouldn't shy away from that or pretend it doesn't exist because of that. And I think that that's the most insidious stuff. It isn't Pat Robertson acting like a religious clown, because that's not dangerous in the same way, because he used to be taken seriously, too.
Yeah.
We have to acknowledge that Billy Graham is an anti-Semite, has said vicious things, that he tried to deny these things, and then the tapes of those things of him talking to Nixon about how the Jews are taking over came out. And I'm sorry, that's exactly what you said, Billy Graham. The same thing you said about all people that are different from you. They're all burning in hell, all that stuff.
Would it be different if he kept his faith but said that was an angrier me, and I no longer stand by those statements?
I probably was an angrier me then, but I don't change my mind about that. I probably would write it differently, but the thing I wrote would stay the same.
Right. I'm with you on this one. There are certain posts that just continue to be inflammatory, which I took down because I'm kind of tired of that narrative, and it's not really what the show is about. And it was a cognitive hit. You know, it was a cognitive investment I just didn't care to make anymore. So I blank those posts. This one I keep because Billy Graham, people hold up Billy Graham as sort of a monument to the goodness of Christianity in the American context. Just like they hold up Mother Teresa as a monument to the positivity of Catholicism in an incredibly poverty-stricken context, where both are false. And all you got to do to not be on this guy's side, all you got to do to not back that, is to not defend this guy when facts are pointed out. Yeah, you called him a bigot because that's what he is. But you didn't just say call him a bigot, na-na-na-boo-boo. You said you called him a bigot, and you referenced the Nixon tapes. You referenced stuff he had been said recently at the time, then being 2012. And you made a very strong case about why this guy is not what he's purported to be. And then, but do they see that? No. It falls into the narrative, the constant narrative of shut up.
Yeah,
that's what this post is. That's what most of this is. Shut up. Don't say anything. You don't have a place at the table. Shut up. Don't talk about Billy Graham. Shut up. Don't talk about Christianity in America. Shut up. We want to put In God We Trust up in the county wall. Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I open my mouth, somebody, a Christian, an atheist, anybody, tells me to shut it.
Well,
every time.
The thing is that this guy would say shut up to anything.
The thing I can't stand, by the way. That's the thing that
shut up is not an argument.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
No,
it's
well, it's and the extension of that I think is even more infuriating is you can't say that.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's not... Where it doesn't become just that you... you shouldn't be allowed to talk, but that you shouldn't be allowed to say what you're saying,
right.
as if somehow it's a taboo even for you to have expressed yourself.
That if somebody says something that is wrong or harmful, the correct response is to go at them in a way that educates them about why they're wrong. Give them the chance to correct themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to just say, you're stupid, shut up. You're stupid, shut up doesn't mean anything. You're a bad person, shut up.
Right.
Tell about why it's a bad person, because in your response, you're also educating somebody who might be up in the air. What if I am wrong? What if I'm wrong about Billy Graham and I'm being unfair? What if I'm being unfair and I'm lying? That's the stuff that is the response. But if I'm not lying, then if I'm not being unfair to him, that I'm damning him by his own words, then what exactly is wrong other than that I'm popping a balloon that has a belief system that you have inside of it that you want to cherish and say, and that balloon is labeled Billy Graham is a good person.
The other side of that, though, is the shut up narrative. When that argument starts up with me in a place where I can react, because often I'm most told to shut up, like specifically within God We Trust in Pierce County, the things said about me by Christians were, I'd be dead in about 15 different ways if they were all serious. I'll just put it, it's one of those. And, but they're all just, some of them are just bigoted Shazbot heads blowing off some steam. Some of them just aren't really cogitating enough to recognize that the things they're saying are kind of horrible.
Or death threats.
But some of them are just saying, shut up, like, get out of my head.
Yeah.
And so it's an actual, they don't have a defense. They recognize they don't have a defense. And they just want what they're perceiving as an attack to cease. So when I encounter the shut up argument in person, I don't engage. But I'll say something like, you have a right to tell me to shut up. I have a right to not.
Yeah.
And then I move on and I try to leave them literally behind me if I can, where I am not facing them in my rhetoric, where it's no longer perceived as a direct attack. Because sometimes the person covering their ears and telling you to shut up this week is an angry Christian. Next week is a new atheist.
Yeah.
And we have to be careful of that.
Yeah. And I think that's the tack to take, because envision yourself 500 years into the future, and you would treat
them what cucumbers by then, right.
But I mean that you would treat people who would hold an argument that strongly as you would people who believe that the earth is flat,
right?
You know, where it's like there's nothing to be gained by engagement,
right?
There is only to pass over it in silence and make that there in your rearview mirror,
right?
Essentially,
yeah. Some people you just can't engage because you can't have a good faith conversation with them, because all they will do is, it's like they basically have already hit Control X and they just hit Control V at you over and over again. They're not taking in new information and responding to it. They've decided that they've already had the conversation with you.
I just learned something about how Mike uses a computer. Never mind. Continue.
Okay. But it works.
It does.
But yeah, it's kind of crazy. But I mean, I'm at the point now where I would have been aching for a fight at the beginning of my discovering my own atheism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really not there now where I wanted to have a fight with Mormon missionaries, a polite one, albeit a good faith one, where I want to hear their answer about, their religion being overtly racist up until the 1970s, or the things that they've done to fight marriage equality in California, or, I mean, just name it. But that's not me now.
Yeah.
Now me, when they come to my door, I'm just like, I will talk to you about anything you want for as long as you want, but it can't be about religion. Do you want to talk about Batman?
See, that's great. And for me, it was never... there's two universes of arguments that I love to have. There's the universe of bar arguments, and then there's the universe of formal debate. And in bar arguments is things like, does God exist? The problem of theodicy. Cosmological
Shazbot
that you can't know anything about without having a degree in quantum chromodynamics. That sort of thing. Those are bar conversations. And
Detective waving.
Yes, indeed. Those are bar conversations, and I love having them in their proper context, where there is literally nothing at stake, and we can all smile at each other,
right,
order each other beers,
right,
and have a good time.
Yep.
That's the conduct. But then the formal debate stuff is when Mormons come to my house and tell me that gay people don't have a soul. or something like that. Or they do have a soul, but it is tainted by the curse of the rot. And
the detective.
The detective. and that's the kind of conversation that I wanted to have then on a show like this, and that I still want to have. It's not about does God exist. It's about whether or not we're allowed the same opportunities in America as other people, as you know, as do trans people, and does the LGBT community deserve to be treated like people, or
spoiler, yes,
like some sort of like hyper intelligent cattle? And yeah, spoiler, they deserve to be treated like people. Those are the conversations I wanted to have with the show, and I still want to have, which is why I keep doing the show. But another in the 5,000 does God exist debates is not something that I would need to really think about it to participate. But I've been asked, and I've said no a couple times because it's like, yeah, Hitchens did it. I can move. I think we can move on from this now.
Yeah. And it's like when Gus Van Sant did that shot by shot remake of Psycho.
Yeah,
it's already been done.
Yeah, dude.
I can follow in the exact same footsteps and read out the same crappy, you know, Latin words.
I get why he wanted to do it.
Oh, it was important to do it then.
Why I don't why he did the shot-by-shot remake. What I don't understand is why it got a release. Why didn't he just spend his own money, make that movie, and show it to his pals and knock back some beers? I did a shot-for-shot remake. Watch how amazing Psycho is, and this is how I know how amazing this movie
is.
Yeah,
it's like, I just want to see the one with Anthony Perkins.
I mean, it is the ultimate in film school projects, in a way.
It is. I like the idea of trying to do it.
Yeah.
But,
It's an interesting idea. It's not something I would watch.
But, I mean, this is the sort of thing that took over YouTube for a number of years, where it was shot-for-shot remakes. Okay, you're Kent Hovind. And I'm Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah.
And I'll say the exact same things
Christopher
Hitchens
said. Why you gotta make me Kent Hovind all the time, Mike?
Just shut up. I need this.
You know, I was having.
Do I gotta put the suit on?
You do.
The last time I was ever goaded into having this spontaneous theist versus atheist argument was at work, which is something that I generally yeah. keep the lid on.
I stay the hell out.
And
good thing I'm unemployed.
Well, but I mean, the subject was about. Ken Ham's debate with Bill Nye, and the guy who was the Catholic in the room, or lapsed Catholic or Catholic, I'm not even think he was a Catholic.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was a very his job was that he was a very politic guy, and he knew what to say in every situation. Was it's not debate, it's sport. Like that was
no,
his.
It's totally a sport.
And he was absolutely right. And I think there were other people in the room who had known by Googling me, like had known what it was. And I wasn't engaging because I'm not going to try to make a buffoon out of myself in front of other people, especially considering the point I was just trying to make about Bill Nye, which is I don't understand why Bill Nye is doing this other than like the idea that someone has to answer to these ridiculous claims, so it better be, I'm equipped to do it, and all I can say is you only make Ken Ham stronger, you know.
I don't think
that ended up happening.
It's
though.
Just like
it didn't.
It's just like the evil, you know, sphere in Fifth Element.
I honestly,
the more you attack it, the larger it gets.
I had that opinion at the beginning and post it. I think that all it had managed to do is go, hey, Bill Nye is still cool. I remember him when I was 10 years old, and wow, that guy looks like a joke. That other guy with a weird beard that looks. Gets crawling up his face like lichen.
I was almost certain Bill Nye did it for the ham on Nye pun.
But I mean, I didn't watch that. I honestly didn't think there's anything to be gained from it. And I certainly, if I imagine my imaginary interlocutor on the other side, a theist, probably they would get nothing gained from that either.
Well, this
nothing will have been gained from it.
I think something was gained from it because it was on a stage that it hadn't been before, and it was
that's
with,
true.
And it was with Bill Nye. But there's no gain in doing it again,
right? Mm. And Bill Nye wasn't advocating for the atheist side; he was advocating specifically for science. Where when you have Christopher Hitchens doing it,
he's
advocating for the lack of religion.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so this goes to another thing, I guess another theme that I've been doing on the show, which we're wrapping up soon because it's like 900 degrees in here, debates and what they fail to do. And this is a conversation Mike and I have been having in pieces over the entire presidential campaign, which is we both want debates which are substantive. We liked it when the guy from Telemundo, what's his name?
Jorge Ramos. The guy I have on TV, I have a man crush on.
Yeah, totally. Just when people say, dumb Shazbot, he just takes him to task and like plays clips and stuff like that, and that's amazing. But honestly, That's not what debate is for. Debate is a lot more like professional wrestling.
Oh, okay.
Than it is like detective waving or actual fact checking. Is the guy the moderator is only there to make sure that the rules are held on to. If the moderator has an opinion, he's a bad moderator, and they need to bring another one in. And that's straight from like Harvard debate.
Sure, I hate that style. I like it the sucks. One where the it's moderator terrible. Is the referee. Put him right. in a striped shirt, and I have a side too. My side is the truth, and if you break that side, you will look bad.
Okay, Christopher Nolan. Jeez,
I'm here for the truth.
I just want justice. Where is she?
I can suck my own detective.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't the
different
thrill.
Movie. And so let's put debate where it belongs, which right now would be Rio, and let's put the debate in the Olympics where it belongs because it's a sport, and have what stands in for debate in American politics be something more along the lines of one candidate and 50 fact checkers connected to the internet.
Yeah.
Let's see how long candidates last against that.
Yes.
That's kind of my deal. And with that, this went a bit longer than I thought, but I think we should probably go out with Coke Classic. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, Twitter us at AskAnAtheistWA. We're on Facebook and a few other places. I'd also like to thank Radio versus the Martians for sitting with me on this segment.
Hey!
Whoop. That's RadioVersusTheMartians.com, and you guys are starting a new project, aren't you?
Yes, we have a podcast dedicated to Western anti-hero Jonah Hex called Hex and Violence.
And that's HexandViolence.com, I'm assuming?
Oh, no website.
Oh, we'll fix that.
RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
RadioVersusTheMartians.com!
I can't recall the name of the song.
Well, I'm playing.
It's the one that they're most known for.
Right, yeah. This one is from Locust Abortion Technician from 1987. Wow. It was very popular in the D-Dial circles in Chicago.
Mm.
And so people would quote it a lot.
A funny thing about regret is that it's better to regret something you have done than to regret something you haven't done. And by the way, if you see your mom this weekend, would you be sure and tell her, Satan!
Oh, I know this song.
Yeah, everybody knows this song.